Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready? Let's go!
Now, from the IMLD home studios, in its ninth season, you are listening to In Much Less Detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Your football party is live with your hosts, Jay and Dre. And we have some extra co-hosts you can hear at the beginning.
She snuck that in there and then just ran away. She thought she was going to be really cool and say that. So, oh, hang on a second.
Uh-oh.
Hi.
Hi. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm great. We're me and your dad are about to do this long football show. You're going to be asleep by the time we're done with it.
What if I'm awake?
you might be awake, but I don't know. It's going to be a long show.
Then I need to have caffeine.
No, you don't get caffeine. You have to go to bed.
Yeah, no caffeine for you. You'd be up all night if you had caffeine.
Promises. She promising you caffeine? Okay, good.
No, only in the daytime. Caffeine is no good at night. Take it from Uncle
Dre. Yes, it is. It is good. But Daddy's having caffeine.
No, that's beer.
But Daddy's having alcohol.
Yes, that's the opposite of caffeine. That puts you to sleep.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You all done, buddy? No, you're going to take over the show? You want to do the show for me tonight?
Yes.
Your picks might be better than mine. Oh, that's enough of you. Good night, little man.
Bye.
Good night, buddy.
My name is Cheeseballs.
Cheeseballs? Okay. Good night, Cheeseballs. Okay. Little cute factor action there for you tonight.
Gotta love it.
Well, my daughter just got home from being at her friend's house, so she ran up here and, you know, wanted to give you a hug, and then she just grabbed the headphones and said she wanted to talk.
She had great timing. She waited for my whole long-ass introduction, and then she waited right to the right perfect moment and stuck her line in and got out of there like a bandit.
They're pros.
Yeah.
You know,
got that timing down pat.
Yeah. Especially after having to sit here and do a whole show with me.
And then Graham wants caffeine. Is that?
Yeah, and beer. They came up here and like, ooh, can I have some of that? I was like, no, get out of here. Get out and have my beer.
I explained to him that beer is the opposite of caffeine. He thought it was the same thing. I was like, no, you don't want
the beer. Yeah. Well, you know, that once the show's over, you know, right to bed.
Yeah, that was a different start to our show. It's much better than the starts in which we are disconnected and can't hear each other. So
yeah, 20 minutes of dead air. Yeah, that's usually not a very good start to the show.
No, much better start tonight. You are, if you haven't figured it out already, listening live to the only show that will give you two children at the top of the show hosting the show and their wonderful insights. In Much Less Detail, the podcast, we are here with you live on a Saturday night, December the 4th, 2021. I'm Dre. He's Jay. Those were his children, the Cute Factors. Always great to have the Cute Factors on. And, man, we were talking right before we went on the show, Jay. The longest season ever. We have started December, and we have six more weeks of football left.
It's
never ending.
It's interminable almost. I mean, it's It's been a chore. I mean, I guess that's the, what's the best word that we could use? You know,
starting that's a good
starting
one.
To feel
chore.
Like work.
Right. Chore is a good word. And think about this. This is just the stopgap. The 17 is not what the owners want.
No.
This is just what they're doing now to sort of ease it in. They're instead of jamming it all the way in you, they're sort of easing it in. And eventually they're going to go 18. 18 weeks for each team, 19 when you count the bye. And it's I don't know. What they're doing is testing the love of football for every football fan out there, because there is a such thing as too much of some things. And I think I've always known in my mind for many years that they were going to 18 eventually. And I used to really look forward to that day because it's more football, and I was a huge football fan. I still am, obviously. But, man, they're starting to test it. They're really starting to push how much is too much. And this year is starting to feel like a lot.
Oh, hang on. Sorry. Cute factor number one is up here trying to talk to me while you talk to me, too, while she brushes her teeth. So imagine trying to have headphones on, trying to listen to a 9-year-old talk to you while they're brushing their teeth.
And listening to a 9-year-old on your headphones, too. That can't be easy.
So, and she's trying to grab for my beer. Get out of here. Go downstairs. Good night, sweetheart. Come on. Come here. Give me a hug. Love you. Oh, thank you. Would you kiss me with toothpaste? Go to bed. Get out of here. Good night. Hard to believe she's going to be 10 in a few months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
feeling old yet?
How time flies. I'm not as old as you, pal, because you've been there the whole time. You've seen everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, since day one.
I can only imagine when the next time I see her, how shocked I'm going to be, because she's going to be so much bigger since the last time I saw her.
Well, let's see. She's just a hair under 5 feet tall.
Jesus.
Yeah. At 9.
Taller than some of my adult relatives already. That's, but of course she's your daughter.
Yeah, she's
so
a tall girl.
A surprise.
Yeah, she's a tall girl. You know, Grant hasn't quite had that big growth surge yet, but it's coming.
It's coming.
Yeah, it's coming.
Since they keep grabbing at your alcohol.
No, they're both downstairs now, so I was able to listen to what you're saying. But no, I agree. They obviously 18 is the goal. I think we're going to end up with a 2-week preseason and an 18-week regular season here probably in the next few years. That would make sense, because you can't have this odd number.
Right. This is just temporary.
It's a competitive disadvantage because you end up with these crazy home and away situations. Then you factor in some of these teams get hosed because one of their home games, quote unquote home games, air quotes, is London. Or whatever city around the world they want to try to go and play in, you know, if we're going to, you know, they want to send them to Mexico City, or they want to send them to Berlin, who knows where they want to send them, as they try to make this more international. So now you have an uneven balance of home and away games, plus a team that might have to play one of those uneven home games in London. Yeah, it's not a good situation. So obviously you want to have an even number of games. This would also make, I believe, pro football the only of the four major sports to have an odd-numbered regular season.
Correct.
Which is weird when you think about it. So, yes, this is a stopgap. This is really just a stopgap. And a few years from now, we'll be on the show and be, oh, remember when they had those 17-game schedules? Yeah.
Those are weird, man.
I remember, we talk about the rare years that they had the 18-game week where they had the 2 bye weeks.
Yeah, you tried to do some research and find out that they only did it maybe like 1 year. Or
I was
two
thinking
years.
It only
like
happened
did a lot longer than that.
I thought they only did that one or two times, but we don't have our crack research staff, quote unquote, me didn't look that up when we were talking about that on the show. But yeah, it's just making the season feel really long. And just our season within a season has been probably the craziest season we've had, at least since we've been like the official record going all the way back to even the couple of years of the blog days and then since the podcast started, because the swings back and forth have been crazy. I don't think we've had a season yet since we've started doing the locks where we've had a 4-game swing and then a 3-game swing the other way. You know, it used to be with the locks that you get up 2 and it's over.
And it's not, and nothing's over this year.
And you were up 4, and I mean, we're like, this is a runaway, and now you're up 1.
Now I'm up 1. Nothing is a complete lock this year, whether it's our picks, the locks, just everything is up in the air and always in flux and going back and forth. No, we've never had a season like this. We can't blame that on the extra long season because that hasn't even come into play yet, week 18.
No, it's just the randomness of these games. The fact I also truly believe there isn't that, like, there is no dominant team. Every, you know, we talk about this, that there are all these teams, even the good ones, have flaws. And the amount of garbage time that we've seen more garbage time and late random scoring than I can ever remember seeing. And that's also as the rules have kind of loosened things up, you know, a little bit more. Team construction, a lot of the rules, a lot of these things have allowed for these crazy sort of like garbage time, fourth quarter type surges from teams. So it's very weird right now. It makes it hard to predict. I mean, hell, I was happy to get that one win over you last week to kind of just like stop the bleeding, you know, because otherwise I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be down, what, like 15 games now? No, I had to. Had to kind of just stop the bleeding, at least got the one win over you, and felt like I had to work hard just to get that.
So I've had 11 wins to your 8 going into we both had the same pick Monday night. No, the one win you're talking about is earlier in the day.
I had the Rams. Green Bay
over the
Packers.
Rams.
Yeah.
Okay.
That ended up going my way with some crazy late garbage time.
Uh-huh. That game was very odd.
Every game you have to sweat out, I swear.
Yeah. And, yeah, the Rams, you know, their season almost is like my season, where they start out looking like world beaters and they're just going to romp and kill everybody. And then they have a stretch where they're like, what's wrong with the Los Angeles Rams? And they're still in that stretch. Whereas I already came out of sort of my malaise and started making picks well again. I was really hot, and then I was extremely cold, and now I'm back sort of hot. There, I don't have any 8-8 weeks or 7-7. I'm either really good or really bad. It's crazy. But the Rams were really good to start, and now they're not so good. And there's no shame at all in going to Green Bay and losing. And it almost felt fait accompli as I was watching that game that they were going to lose, not just because of how they were playing, but because it's Green Bay. And it seems like no matter what defense comes in, no matter what the game plan is, Rodgers and the Packers figure out a way to do what they're going to do. They did it in the playoffs against the Rams last year, and he did it again this year in the regular season. I may be stuck if they have another rematch in the playoffs and the Rams again have to go to Lambeau Field, I might get stuck again taking the Rams, thinking that this is the team that's best constructed to go into Lambeau and win, a team that has a pass rush that gets after the quarterback and has good play on the back end in their secondary. Like, I really think that's the best way to get after the Packers, and yet they can't do it. They've had a couple of cracks at it, and they just can't get it done.
Yeah, that's two tries at them in the last two seasons. And, you know, one of those in the division round last year. And, they came up short both times. And Packers didn't go as physical as I expected them to. But, you know, they moved the ball. Rodgers had a really good game. He seems to have shaken off the rust, you know, and it didn't seem to be affected by his toes or whatever he's got he's dealing with now. He, you know, he spreads the ball around. He ends up throwing the ball 8 different receivers, you know. A.J. Dillon, as I called, I said A.J. Dillon was going to kind of be the workhorse back, and he didn't pile up like a ton of yards per attempt. But he's that guy who just, he's the, you know, he's the battering ram. He's that guy that just sort of softens you up and has to keep you honest. And Aaron Jones, since he's come back from injury, hasn't been as featured. So I don't know if Aaron Jones is, you know, maybe not 100%, or if we're just seeing the Packers go to more of a shift towards A.J. Dillon. I was on record in the offseason saying I would have saved the money if I was the Packers and just had Dillon be the feature guy. They could have very cheaply re-signed Jamal Williams, who would have been a very serviceable number two. I thought they wasted money. I don't understand that move, because it seems like when we start getting later into the season now, we start getting into some of these higher pressure situations, the Packers have been leaning on A.J. Dillon a lot more. And that's not a bad thing. He's good.
He's really good. I think some of that is Aaron Jones getting hurt, sort of allowing Matt LaFleur to make that shift a little bit. Well, we're going to look out for Jones and not use him up as quite as much. And let's have this Dillon guy get some run and see what he's got and see what he's made of. He's made of a lot. He was making some guys look stupid out there. So not just battering, but getting some swing passes and making some defenders look bad. He's giving you a little bit of everything and just helping that offense hum right along. Randall Cobb was making some guys look dumb out there before he popped his groin.
47-year-old Randall Cobb or whatever it is.
Crazy. It was a hell of a performance all around by the Packers offense. And even when the Rams got some offensive contribution, they got a long touchdown from Odell Beckham Jr., so he finally decided to do something. And then, of course, he hurts himself not long after that.
Yeah.
It's still not enough because the Packers just, you know, they got 36 points up on the board, and you know, if you're the Rams, you've realized you're going to have to do a lot better on defense and on offense if you're going to contend with the Packers or anybody else. Yeah, the Rams are, they got some issues. I don't know exactly what they need to do to turn things around. There's a lot of talk in certain media spots about, hey, this is Matthew Stafford. He wasn't nearly as great as he was showing that first month, and you know, maybe he's not quite this bad, but this is going to revert back to the mean at some point. That Stafford is just not that good. This is not, you know, some great franchise all-time quarterback Hall of Famer that was just stuck in Detroit. This is the Matthew Stafford that we've seen all this time. I don't know where you land on that side. I tend to think Stafford really was that good in Detroit and just had some bad luck around him. And I think he's possibly going to be this good again here in LA, but maybe he's hurt, maybe his injuries, maybe there's some other things going on, but there's definitely some lines being taken on the Matthew Stafford issue based on the last few games. I don't think he's as bad as he's been showing.
Well, as it goes with the way our picks are going, I can see it going either way.
Ah.
Because there's that part of me that thinks that maybe just Stafford being a Lion and being in that long-suffering franchise, being around losing so much, maybe it's sort of – maybe that's sort of snuck into his DNA. And then there's that other part of you that sees just the raw talent. Like, you know, when he gets back there and he chucks that deep and he makes these great bomb throws and he makes good reads, it's like you just never know which Matthew Stafford it seems like you're going to get if you're the Rams from game to game. His highs are very high, but his lows are not very good. And even within the game, you know, he throws a pretty brutal pick six to the – you know, to Rasul Douglas, who's now made two big – he also picked off Kyler Murray at the end of the Arizona game to seal that up for a guy they signed, I believe, off Carolina's practice squad, or it was like he had been cut. You know, talk about getting somebody in there to make some big plays for you when all of your top-level DBs have all been hurt. Stokes has been hurt. Jair Alexander's been gone. For a while. So, yeah, I mean, the Packers are playing really good, and they're still missing their top two defensive players.
Yeah, they're making pay with what they got, and it's a little scary for the rest of the NFC that they're not whole. When they get some their guys back, and they're going to be potentially even better, and Rodgers gets further and further away from the toe injury, if that's something that's going to affect him the rest of the year, I don't know. But so far,
didn't seem to bother him too much in that game.
Yeah. So that's the Packers still doing what they do. And the Rams, like I said, I'm still bullish on them. A lot of people are, you know, thinking that they're going downhill from here. I don't buy into that necessarily. Like I look at their, you know, top division rival, the Cardinals, who mm-hmm. are still two games clear of them, but I don't feel a whole lot of confidence around the Arizona Cardinals. First of all, they can't seem to get their stars on the field. We still don't really know for sure if their guys are going to play tomorrow, even though they're coming off a bye.
Right.
And there's still just this sort of nagging feeling of the Cardinals weren't supposed to be this year. They were supposed to be improved, but they weren't supposed to be, you know, 7-0, 9-2 improved. And there's still a big time regression coming for them. And I don't think it's happened quite yet. I still think the Rams have a shot to rally up and take them down if they do sort of stumble and fall on their face in the second half. I'm not saying there's evidence that they're going to. I just have sort of this nagging feeling that it can't stay this good for them.
And if the Rams and the Cardinals start to cancel each other out, then the Packers are obviously playing for that number one seed. I don't know if there's a team that needs it more.
Yeah, it'll be them and Tampa Bay basically plugging it out.
Right, because you want to lure somebody up there. I mean, it almost worked for them last year in the NFC Championship game, and what was just a bizarre game overall. But if you're the Packers, you want that bye, you want that number one. You got to start thinking in those terms because you got to look up at Arizona and be like, okay, you know, longest season ever. Can you guys do this over 18 weeks?
And the Cowboys are still lurking around as well near the top. So
Cowboys are so, you know, they've been a health problem, really, and their defense is not good at all.
They were for a while, but they've definitely fallen off. They're trending down, as I like to say.
They're trending down. Their defense has become a bit of a liability. It didn't affect them, too bad in their last game, but I think it's gonna start to creep up.
Yeah, as we found out Thursday night, it's much easier to get your defense looking well when you're playing the likes of the Saints right now.
When you're playing Taysom Tebow it's just not good. Not good for those Saints. You know, four picks from it. Again, we didn't lock that up.
Yeah, I know. Same thing with the Bills on Thanksgiving night.
Uh-huh.
We're looking at both of them like, damn it. Ugh. Such an easy lock possibility. Again, I'm within 1 point of picking the final score completely correct. So I definitely saw that Dallas win coming and saw that exactly the way it was supposed to go. We both should have locked it down. I mean, I think I'm pretty confident in my lock this week. I certainly hope it worked out. But then again, what do I know?
No Alvin Kamara. And then you find out you're getting Taysom Hill starting.
I almost don't blame Sean Payton for doing it because that's how bad Trevor Siemian has looked. So it's like, what the hell? Why not? You know he loves Taysom Tebow anyway. You know that's his guy. So you know he was just itching to find a way to get him back in as soon as he was healthy enough. He goes out there and sends him out, and Taysom Hill does exactly what you expect Taysom Hill to do, which is show that he's got some explosive plays and he's got some really good athletic ability, and he's not an NFL quarterback still.
Not in the slightest. Four picks.
No matter how many times Sean Payton sends him out there as a starting NFL quarterback, Taysom Hill is not a starting NFL quarterback. I'm sorry. He's just not.
Yeah, because his wins last year were two Atlanta wins against a team that had completely fallen apart and was on the, you know, trying to get their coach fired. And, that game in Denver.
The game that should not be mentioned. We should never talk about that game again. That's how ugly that was. The game that shall not be mentioned.
The game that should not have been played.
Exactly. You guys are down four quarterbacks? You're going to play anyway. We're not going to push the game out. We're not going to give you any opportunity to rectify your situation. No, just go out there. Go ahead. I don't know who that quarterback is, but he's not really a quarterback. Go ahead and play anyway.
Hinton or whatever his name was.
We
future IMLD Hall of Infamy. remember.
We've spoken enough about that game. We shouldn't talk about it anymore.
But those were totally... Taysom Tebow's wins last year. So good luck with that. Makes you realize suddenly they got to be missing Jameis.
You know, he wasn't so bad. He was and he was a bit of a train wreck as well. He had some throws that made you go but that's you expect that with Jameis Winston.
Right.
But as far as like actual NFL professional quarterbacks, he's all right. He's all right.
Yeah, Taysom Tebow had more picks in that one game than Jameis had all season. So we can talk about Jameis with his tendency to give the ball away or do some silly stuff. Jameis only had 3 picks on the year.
He's better than Simeon, and he's much better than Taysom Tebow.
Yeah.
So whatever you want to say about him.
You got to figure they'd have converted one or two of those into wins, at least, if they had a competent league average NFL quarterback.
Did I pick New Orleans to make the playoffs anyway this year? I think I did. I had a much better opinion of the team overall with Jameis than I do with these two clowns, because their defense has always been representative. And you just need decent offense. You don't need, Drew Brees at his prime. You just need somebody that's, going to guide you along. And I was counting on Kamara as well. And that's obviously compromised with his health. The Saints are definitely falling on hard times for sure.
But I will say listening to that game on the radio was interesting, because I'm listening and then all of a sudden it's that play where Tebow throws the touchdown and the guy's like, he throws it to Lil Jordan Humphrey,
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps saying it, he's like, something Lil Jordan Humphrey. And I just like, why does this announcer keep making fun of this guy?
that little Jordan Humphrey guy. He's pretty good.
Like, okay, is he just like a little wide receiver? So they just got to keep pointing it out. And then I see the replay. I'm like, no, he's big. And then I see the name flash up on the screen. It's Lil Jordan. I was like, oh, I remember you talking about this guy.
What's his name?
One of our previous. What? What?
Uh-oh.
What? How can you name somebody that?
It's his name. Don't wear it out. Lil Jordan.
Oh, Lil Jordan.
Not Lil Jon. That's a different guy. Yeah, Lil Jordan Humphrey.
Lil Jordan Humphrey. I just kept thinking that radio announcer was being a little hard on the guy.
Stop calling him Lil. That's
his bad.
Leave him alone. Making him feel bad. Come on. You'll definitely get a complex if you keep getting called Lil your whole life, but it's his name. You have to call him Lil Jordan because that's his name. His legal name. Yeah, go figure. So the AFC, the most interesting thing that people are talking about.
That was as bad as that story I told you about when I couldn't see the football game, and I kept hearing Joe Buck say Sean Murphy bunting, and I thought he was calling the Oakland playoff game.
No, that's his name, Sean Murphy bunting. That's different from the Oakland catcher Sean Murphy. Completely different guy.
Who's not bunting?
Not that we know of. He might be, but I think they're different guys. At least we've never seen him in the same place. We don't really know for sure.
So there's what stood out to you? I mean, it was a crazy week.
I was going to talk about the biggest thing in the AFC because we were very NFC centric there for the first 20 minutes, and that the Indianapolis Colts. It was the biggest story that they spent a lovely Sunday afternoon showing everyone why they are not on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers level on defense, on offense, coaching decision. Why are they not running the football? This guy, Jonathan Taylor, that's been destroying everybody and looks like he's going to lead the league in rushing and be an MVP candidate. For whatever reason, in the middle of the game, Frank Reich gets struck deaf, dumb, and blind and decides to just keep throwing the ball Carson Wentz sees coverages that he doesn't like, maybe run fits that he doesn't like, and decides to check out of them and throws the ball. That's possible as well. But my initial thought when I was watching the game was that this was coaching, that this was something where, some coaches decide we're not going to run on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at all because there are just too many big guys in there that stop the run, whether it's Vita Vea, stopping the run with his chin and getting his tooth knocked out. Whatever the case may be, they are obviously very good against the run, usually number one against the run most years, 2 years running. And some coaches do that. They decide, we're not even going to bother. We're just going to throw and throw and throw because we can't do anything running anyway. But I did not think the Colts would be one of those teams because that's how great Jonathan Taylor has been, and that's how great their run blocking has been over the last couple of years. We've commented and witnessed it and seen it in action for a long time, but they did it. They actually stopped running the football with Jonathan Taylor, and no surprise, they lost the lead while they were busy stopping the run or stopping themselves from running with Jonathan Taylor. I don't know if you had a strong opinion on it, but that was my strong opinion, is that why would you not try to run with Jonathan Taylor? Why would you do that?
Yeah, and in a game where the Colts were handling them, right? They're handling them in the second half. They're up 10 at halftime. They have the ball in the third quarter, and they're in plus territory, and it's a strip sack that ends up basically turning that whole game around.
Shaq Barrett changed all of it.
Yeah. Not Tommy, not the goat, not any of that. Tom Brady just loves to play against teams that like to beat themselves. Have you ever seen anything like it?
No, because, but when you play 7,000 games, you're going to have some games like that, I guess. I'd certainly see your point.
But yeah, especially in like big games or like important games. And this started to feel like that because the Colts were manhandling them. They were running on them. Jonathan Taylor was running well. He still ended up with a 5.2 yards per attempt. That's good.
That's what I'm saying. There's no reason for you to stop running because you're doing it. You're running already. Why would you stop?
And the funny part is, I'm looking at these stats. He has a 5.2 yards per attempt. His long run was 15. So what's that mean? Every run
grinding it out,
just about right.
Yeah,
you're getting plus yardage on every play. You're wearing these guys out. You've got them up. You're up 10 on them. And you get cute, and it turns the whole game around because it allows the Bucs to go the other way, and score that touchdown to get it within three, and now they're not scared of you anymore. And then and now it's a 3-point game. Now the sphincter's getting tight, right?
Oh yeah,
you know, and you could just see it. You could just see that momentum just swings completely because the first half of that game, the Colts, they had them.
And well, you said it last week. In the preview, Indianapolis had one path to victory.
One.
Run the damn football. Yep. And they went away from it, and they paid the price.
Right. So that's why I believe we both had Tampa. So it's not like this was a losing pick for us.
Right. But I'm watching that game just, you know, feeling bad about it in that first half because the Colts are dominating them and looking like, okay, they've arrived. Here come the Colts, and we got to take them seriously. And then that second half comes, and they just decide to stop running. And, like you said, Shaq Barrett and that strip sack changed all the momentum. They had the 10-point lead. They were about to score again. Tampa Bay, they cut that lead to three. Wentz got picked by Antoine Winfield, and Tampa took the lead after that. And what happens when Indianapolis rediscovers Jonathan Taylor starts running again? They tie it up. And Brady and Leonard Fournette have to – lead the game-winning drive back to win that game. That's the only reason they won was
and the only reason we covered.
Mm-hmm.
Because they get the touchdown instead of the field goal.
Right, Fournette takes it all the way. Great win by Tom Brady there again with the quarterback wins. And I've been long on the record as saying those are bullshit because the quarterback doesn't even play half the game. This case, you know. It was definitely not the quarterback that won the game for them. It was the defense followed by Leonard Fournette, followed by the quarterback. It was like the third or fourth most important factor in winning that game. So that was not about Tampa to me. That game was about the Indianapolis Colts and Frank Wright shooting themselves in the foot. They had one path, and they didn't. And for whatever reason, they went away from it. And not only that, but it's on film that every time they went to that one path, that one thing that they do best, they were successful.
Right, it wasn't explosive, it wasn't sexy, but you know what? They were going to work, and they were going to work on Tampa. So, you know, it's week 12, so you're probably hoping you learn something from that, right? This is coming off of that blowout win against the Bills, so they had to be feeling it. They came out, they had that same type of game plan. They were asserting the dominance over the other team, and this was Tampa. Tampa's not an easy team to do that to. No. And the Colts were doing it. The Colts did it for 2+ quarters. Just couldn't do it for the whole game. And you give a team that's a good team like Tampa is, you give them a crack. You know, and they're a good enough team that they're going to, you know, they're talented enough on both sides of the football that if you give them an opening, they're going to go through it.
Well, the Colts, one of their weaknesses is stopping the run, and that's all they needed. Give the Buccaneers a little bit of a taste, and then Leonard Fournette is able to break through that crease. And what, he scored 4 touchdowns in that game? So
three rushing, 1 passing, I believe, receiving. Yeah, so, no, when teams beat Tampa, and what I've noticed with this, like especially the Brady Bucks, when teams beat them, they beat them all game long. I mean, they get up, they get way up, and then Tampa just doesn't have enough to come back, right?
When you get them down, you got to hammer them.
Right. So when Tampa does get beat, it's just got to be that, like, you know, we talk about the those jailbreak type games, right? Those games that just get massively out of control. That's when Tampa gets beat.
Mm-hmm.
And Indy was on their way to that because that's how the Rams beat them. That's even how the Saints beat them, even though Tampa came almost all the way back in that game. You know, that was that first Trevor Siemian game when he came in late to take over for Winston. But up until the point when Winston got hurt, the Saints were putting it on Tampa, and then they just hung on for dear life.
Yeah, it's amazing that the Colts had the path and had the ability to win that game the way that we thought they could, and they just failed to do it. They had the chance, and they just didn't. And I guess we both knew they were going to. It just felt like one of those games that Tampa was going to come out on top. I didn't know it was going to happen that way, but we did both get that victory. And the other big story in the NFC goes to your lock that, boy, here comes the evil empire. Here comes Belichick and the Patriots again.
Oh.
And they
yeah.
beat the brakes off the Titans.
You know, and you did not – when I said that that was my lock, you were, like, fully like, yep, okay, yeah, I get that one.
No argument from me about that. Yeah, the way the Titans are falling apart, just losing – manpower every week seemingly, and the way the Patriots were surging up and trending up in every possible metric. Yeah, it seemed like a fait accompli, and it came through for you, and I picked the Patriots in that game as well. Yeah, 39 carries to 21 throws for the Titans. That game also didn't go the way that I thought it would, even though the Patriots wound up winning by 23. It was still a great running game for the Titans without Derrick Henry. They go for 270 on the ground. They commit fully to the run, even without Derrick Henry, because they were trying to not rely on Ryan Tannehill, because they know that's their best path to winning football games is to not rely on Tanny. And eventually, because of the score, they have to try to rely on Tanny, and that's where they completely lose the game, because they J.C. Jackson punched a ball away from Deontay Foreman at one point as he was running. Actually, he was running for the lead at that point for the Titans. So that was a very huge play for New England. So that's what they do. They get those big defensive stops. This is going to what we were predicting for the Patriots, that we both had them making the playoffs as the year went on. And I think the defense had a lot to do with that for both of us.
No, the Patriots, they, you want to talk about a team that's just completely, like, rounded into shape from where they were a month or 6 weeks ago? I mean, it's a different team. The defense is playing pretty well. I mean, Mac Jones is completely settling into this Josh McDaniels offense, right? Because you look at the guys, emphasis on guys, that he's, like, throwing the ball to or giving the ball to. I mean, Ramondre Stevenson in the backfield, Damian Harris. I mean, those are guys.
Dude.
Jacoby Myers, Kendrick Bourne, Brandon Bolden, Jonnu Smith, Nelson Agholor, Hunter Henry, and then those two running backs. That's guys.
I don't think any of those guys are making the Pro Bowl.
I was about to say, there are zero Pro Bowlers probably on this entire offense. But they're just, you know, they're working within themselves. Mac Jones is getting better and better every week, damn near 10 yards per attempt in this game. you know, versus Ryan Tannehill, who was just over 4 yards per. How do you run for 270 yards and your quarterback only gets you 4-point-some yards per attempt?
And throws for 93 yards on the day. Yeah, that's they were fully committed to the run despite not having Derrick Henry. That was amazing to me.
Embarrassing.
But I think that points out what the Titans feel like they have to do to survive is they can't let Tanny be the man because he's not. He's just not that guy.
We talk about these teams that have one pathway to victory. There's another one.
They have to run the ball no matter who their running back is. The Titans have to run the ball in order to compete.
Yeah, they get 200-yard backs in that game. So, hey, good for them. They lose by 23.
Right, exactly. They did something. They accomplished something, I guess, by doing that. But
now there's
I was going to move on to another quarterback that the team doesn't want to rely on him in order to try to win football games, and that's the Vikings. 49ers run the clock down and just wear down the Minnesota Vikings. And it sucks that Deebo Samuel and Dalvin Cook got hurt in the same game, but you know the San Francisco brain trust coached around it. The Vikings brain trust could not, and Kirk Cousins had a Kirk Cousins type game, very inaccurate.
Yeah, kind of up and down. You know, not the highest completion percentage. He threw a couple of touchdowns, threw a pick. You know, when you lose Dalvin Cook and you're not getting much out of the guy behind him, you know. But again, the Vikings, we know what they need to do to win the game, right? We used to talk about how certain teams, like nobody looks like, you know, certain teams. The Vikings, the Browns, teams that need to run, like the Titans, right? You're starting to see these teams where you get how they're built. You know what they need to do. The best way for them to win is to hide the quarterback.
Yep.
And run to win. And it works, but you need it to – everything needs to kind of line up for you for that to happen. And it didn't happen for them either. And the Colts, another one, right?
Right.
It's all got to line up.
Yeah, you really have to be sure that your guy can handle it if you're going to put the whole thing on him. I guess Frank Reich thought his guy could handle it. Carson Wentz did not. The Vikings couldn't handle it after they lose Dalvin Cook. Yeah, that offense is so delicate. Like if it's not balanced exactly perfectly, then it's off. And we saw that in the San Francisco loss. You mentioned Baker Mayfield and the Browns. How do you give up four INTs on a quarterback and still lose the game? Because that's really difficult to do too.
Especially as bad as Lamar Jackson played in that game, and you come up that high in the turnover ratio, you don't lose many of those.
And they didn't just lose; they lost the point spread too. We got the backdoor cover with the late field goal. Lamar was clearly rusty from being off last week. 4 INTs; it still wasn't enough for the Browns to knock off Baltimore. That's just pathetic, as far as I'm concerned. Like you get four. Every time they got the ball back, it's like, okay, well, Browns got great field position. They got another turnover. Here we go. This is where they go and make them pay. No, Browns could not make them pay. Couldn't do it. They can't. You know, if Cleveland can't run the ball, they have no shot at all. And they were the 40 yards rushing for the Cleveland Browns is just amazing that it was that low of a number. So you're talking about having to rely on Baker Mayfield because they couldn't run the football, and Baker is just being held together by bubblegum and baling wire. And he can't make any plays happen himself. He was trying like hell. It's like, you know, he's always trying, but there's not enough there. You got a guy that can't put enough on the ball when he throws it. He's hobbling. He can't really run. You know, he can't run. He can't throw. Like, why is he out there? I'm telling you, I don't know when, if they're going to make that deal, but I'd get Case Keenum in there. I'm sorry. Like this guy, I know Baker's he's trying to be the gamer and he's trying to be the team leader and he's trying to be the hero and all of that stuff. But my God, the guy, it looks like he's handicapped out there. Just sit him down.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. There's a point where you're not helping your team. And we already know the best way for them to win is to establish that run and ground and pound and then get, you know, accurate, some play action. Baker, he's hurt in a part of his body that doesn't really enable him to function in that sort of play action game. You know, it's not his throwing shoulder, but it's his other one. And you think about, you know, the shifting of everything, of trying to, you know, read option, or, you know, if you're under center, I couldn't imagine, you know, it's not working when he's physically limited.
He's
not overly gifted. He's not an overly talented guy anyways. So,
right.
You know, Baker at 80% or 70%, yeah, Case Keenum's probably better than that. At least he's at 100%.
And Baker was under 50% in the game. Like, when's the last time you've seen a quarterback under 50%? That's
in the 80s.
That almost never happens. So that just shows how terrible he is right now. And it's, you know, the injuries and, you know, whatever the case may be, the lack of talent around him. But, yeah, great job, great game plan by the Ravens to just run blitz him to death. And they just could not get anything going on the ground between Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. And that left Baker to be the guy. Like, he had to be the guy. Think about that. You got your running backs back. Hunt had been hurt. He returned from his calf injury. You got your backfield. You got your quarterback. And you got the other quarterback turning it over to you four times. Like, what else do you need if you're the Cleveland Browns? Like, what you know, how much was it set up on a platter for them to succeed? And they still couldn't.
The Ravens aren't stupid. The Ravens, we know, are a very well-coached team. We always talk about that, the respect we have for Harbaugh and Wink Martindale, right? Obviously, the Ravens knew where to attack the Cleveland Browns, and they were successful. They were so successful that they were able to overcome four picks from their quarterback. So that's coaching.
Damn right. Six-point win and, you know, minus four, whatever the plus-minus was. They coached the hell out of that. Now, again, your quarterback, you have a healthy quarterback out there that maybe can take advantage of at least one of those turnovers, and it might be a whole different scenario. The Browns might have won the game. That's why I say go to Case Keenum, because Baker can't take advantage. He can't do it right now.
Even with all that, the margins were slim enough that a good play your way anywhere in there, right? And that's – that could be a game changer. So I thought you were going to talk about the other game in that division, because I texted you about that one.
Mm.
Here's my text to you from last Sunday. Bengals are having none of the Steelers shit.
Yeah.
if this was the old days of the newspaper where you'd get the one sentence blurb for each game, obviously you couldn't have printed that, but that pretty much sums up that game.
I don't know if there's anything you could say about the Steelers' effort that would be printable. Like, none of it.
Yeah. We thought that we both had the Steelers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're thinking sunning territory. You know what we got? We got the reverse sunning.
I hate the reverse sunning, especially when I don't see it coming. No, we were thinking, it's a big game. It's a revenge game from what Cincy did to him the first time, and Mike Tomlin can't take these guys lightly because he's already gotten his ass beat by them. So
it turns out that first game wasn't a fluke.
Apparently not. This is big uh-oh for me, and the reason is very simply because Cincinnati beats the brakes off of the Steelers, and they didn't use Jamar Chase to do it. That's uh-oh, because that's my whole thing about the Bengals was – okay, that's great what you were doing early in the season, but that was all, you know, Burrow to Jamar Chase, and nobody was stopping that. Let's see the league adjust to that and shut down Jamar Chase and see what else you got. You know, can you beat me with somebody other than Joe Burrow to Jamar Chase? And they did it, and they've rediscovered their running back in Joe Mixon, and he goes crazy on the Bengals. They run for 198 as a team on the Steelers. They just run it right down Pittsburgh's throat. That was their last – that was the Steelers' last gas, and it was a gurgling choke. And I'm stunned. I'm just absolutely shocked that they got their ass beat twice by the Cincinnati Bengals. But that scares the hell out of me because the Bengals did it in a different way than they did it the first time, and they've seemed to have made the adjustment to the adjustment that the league made on them. And I'm not saying that I'm thinking the Bengals are going to go, you know, really far now, but I got a brand new respect for them. I'm looking at them with a raised eyebrow, like, oh, okay, I see y'all now. All right.
No, and you said exactly the part. Of course, you said what I was thinking there was, so the Bengals come out and they're winning all these games early, and it's just the Joe Burrow to Ja'Marr Chase show, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. Okay, all we have to do is stop that. We'll play our guys deep. We'll roll the coverages. You know, we're so worried about Burrow to Chase that, oops, we opened up all the running lanes for Joe Mixon, who turns out he's pretty good. So, you know, it used to be like when we were watching football growing up, you would run to open up the pass. It's like the Bengals have passed now to open up the run. And good luck if you're a defensive coordinator trying to figure out now who do you take away. Now where do you roll it? Because now they can run and throw.
No, let's just cover everybody.
Yeah, double it does team work chase that way.
And
they're playing –
gum up the middle and shut down the run.
Respectable defense.
Mm-hmm.
They're not playing great defense, right? But they're
playing good enough.
Good enough. I mean, they're top half of the league on defense. That's for a team that's, you know, scoring and moving the ball the way they are. That's pretty good.
And so Ben, the pick six to Mike Hilton to close the first half out. So he's just cooked. Like, he's just completely washed up at this point, right?
For who, Ben?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's already an article. I was pulling up the scores from last week. I usually do that on Yahoo because it doesn't scream in my ear like NFL.com does with all the ads and stuff when I'm trying to, like, shuffle between the stats and stuff and the scores from last week, because I'd like to think I'd have them all memorized, but a week ago feels like another life this time of year.
Of course.
With everything, you know, with all the, you know, with work and still trying to recover from the holiday and everything, and then worried about the holidays to come. So yeah, that's my life right now. It's like work, sleep, Christmas shop, work again, eat, sleep, Christmas shop, you know. That's what happens when you got cute factors, man.
Of course, I feel you.
So yeah, so I pull that up and I'm looking at it, you know, and this is, yeah, there's an article right there up on Yahoo about, like, this is probably Ben's last year in Pittsburgh. I'm thinking, yeah, it might have been one too many.
Should have been last year or even the year before.
We looked, I think they were a victim of that great start last year that we knew that whatever plans they had, whether it was rebuild or restructure or move on, that 11-0 probably was the worst thing that could have happened to that team, because it was kind of fool's gold, and we knew it. We saw it. You know, and we saw the way that all went up in flames with that playoff game against Cleveland. But they were like, yeah, we'll roll the dice. We'll take one more chance. It's not going so well for them.
No, sometimes the one last reunion tour for the band is one too many, and they've clearly overstayed their welcome.
Yeah. So the door slammed shut, you know.
Yep. I mean, I don't know what else they would have done. I guess they would have went to one of the younger quarterbacks on their roster or on their practice squad or something like that, and they just would have suffered. Maybe that would have been a better
Mason Rudolph. I mean,
yeah, I don't know if that would have done, you know, any better, but at least it wouldn't have been one more time with the old guy, and he's clearly not, you know, starting material anymore. But I guess if you don't believe in the young guys behind you, then, yeah, you look at the old guy and go, yeah, sure, we'll go with that one more time and see what happens. So,
no, it's not working. It's not working. They've got – I mean, they're 5-5-1. I mean, they couldn't even beat the Lions, man. But either way, something – we were talking about it last year. Something just doesn't look right. You know, and then they go and they draft the running back number one, and that's supposed to, like, reinvigorate them, and they're going to find their running game. There's no running game there.
They don't use them. They don't run them.
Yeah. So, yeah, kind of a disappointing season. There's, you know, did we have them in the playoffs this year?
Oh, God.
I'm looking at what I had, my NFL preview here. Da-da-da. So the AFC, I actually did not have the Steelers in the playoffs this year. So, whew,
I must have.
I had the Browns and the Ravens coming out of the North. So obviously the Bengals are the ones who disrupted that.
Yeah, no, I didn't have the Bengals doing anything. That much I definitely know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did have Pittsburgh as my last wild card spot.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like they're two and nine or something like that. Right. So theoretically,
five and one. But yeah, it's that's the problem though, is when it ends and it's so obviously ending, but you're still winning games. That's how you end up with like a 12 overall draft pick.
Right.
So not exactly a rebuild pick either for the Steelers.
Right. It doesn't put you in position to draft a franchise quarterback really, really high.
Yeah.
Like you could,
unless you're Bill Belichick.
You beat me too. You can get lucky and find a Mac Jones swimming around in the middle of the first round there, and apparently he's going to be the man there. But yeah, it's looking quite ugly for the Steelers, unfortunately. No surprise we haven't heard from Bryce in Brooklyn this season.
You just took what I was going to say. That's all the Steelers. You know how you can tell the Steelers suck? We haven't heard from Bryce in Brooklyn all year.
Probably so we're drowning his sorrows. I feel your pain, Bryce. I'm a Bears fan. Believe me, I feel your pain.
Hey, at least you didn't lock up the Bears.
No, I locked up the motherfucking Houston Texans. The fuck was my problem? The hell's wrong with me? God. You know, and I said at the time it was more of an indictment of the Jets than it was an endorsement of the Houston Texans.
Just straight up win the game.
Yes. With Zach Wilson, with their worst quarterback option of the three, they still managed to win the game. I don't have any breakdown of that shit. It's just the Texans. God.
And Zach Wilson, he played like total ass.
Right. And the Texans still managed to lose.
Yeah.
That's what I get for picked for locking the Texans. That's 100% my fault. That was just not very smart.
Happened was, you know, but again, you're up four locks on me. You know, you can play around, but now all of a sudden, oh, it's a game. It's on again.
I wasn't trying to play around, and it's even more embarrassing when I look at the great week that I had. I go 11-4, and one of the four is one of my locks. Like, I managed to find a way to make one of my four losses one of the locks. I had 11 winners to pick from, and I managed to not do that, so...
Well, that means I went 9-6. So there's no shame in that.
No, very, very good week. We're both over 500. We started off the week well with the Thanksgiving Day games, and we pretty much kept it rolling throughout the rest of the week. One of my wins over you was the Falcons actually showing up and knocking out the Jaguars.
Well, they won. It turns out Cordero Patterson is that important to them.
Yes.
Because he goes for a hundo on the ground. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they got nothing without Cordero.
Matt Smith has got this thing. Well, yeah, because who else are they handing the ball to? Mike Davis and Wayne Gallman.
No.
Guys.
Yeah.
No, yes, when you're Atlanta and your best running back is Cordero Patterson, yeah, you're not very good, but, hey, at least he's explosive and he's fast. And he's obviously taken to that role.
And
he's not a very good wide receiver.
No, that's why he keeps bouncing around.
But he's big and fast. So, I mean, I remember him as when he was just a special teams guy.
And they made something out of him in the backfield there. Just like San Fran was doing with Deebo Samuel before he got hurt. So, yeah, I know you're not the biggest fan of those wide receivers that get converted into running backs, but if you use them sparingly, they can be incredible weapons. You know, some of those guys, you know, and those guys are the bigger size wide receivers too. You're not going to take a flea and put him in the backfield because he's probably going to get, you know, jacked up and driven into the ground. But you take some, you know, the guys of size like Cordero, like Deebo Samuel, like your buddy Ty Montgomery, he's got some size. And you put them in the backfield and all of a sudden you got a bit of a matchup problem because you get those guys on the second level and those linebackers are like, man, this is like tackling a tight end. This isn't fun. I don't want to do this. And especially with Deebo was just mowing people down and looking like he was a like a season changer for the 49ers, the way he was making an impact. And unfortunately, he will not be playing this week with a groin injury. But yeah, Cordero was obviously the difference maker for the 49ers. So for the Falcons, I should say.
Yeah.
So not an important game at all, but just good to see that I could finally figure out what the Falcons were doing for 1 week, because I didn't have any idea what they were doing
and
before.
They're not a very good team. That's a bad division because it's really bad when you look up Atlanta and go, wait, that's the second place team in the NFC
right.
South. Okay.
Yeah.
That's more of a speaking of, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about Carolina, but
Cam.
What was that? That was Danielle Sargent right there.
He's not back anymore, apparently.
Here's Cam Newton's stat line. 5 of 20.
Game 72-71.
5 of 21 for 92 yards and 2 picks and a 5.8 quarterback rating.
Oof. Not anymore, you're not.
That's terrible. They couldn't run either. That was just awful all around.
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey is done.
Again.
Carolina is done as far as I'm concerned. I don't think you don't have to take them seriously anymore.
Paper champions.
Yeah. The longest season ever. They were really good. Then we said they're not so good and talked them down, and I called them phony and fake and frauds. And then they kind of came back and said, oh, yeah, well, watch this. And they rose up a little bit. Then they get Cam, and they have a little boost, and he comes back and knocks off the Cardinals. And, here come the Panthers. They're a new team. They got a new leader, and they got
And then they melt Miami down against Miami, who's trash.
And it was kind of predictable to me that Cam would have his meltdown again.
We both had Miami, I believe, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But again, Miami's got no pressure. I'm on this Miami no pressure kick right now.
It's working. I think they won 4 in a row now. But Cam, just you cannot take the whole game plan or the whole team and put it in his hands. You can use him as the goal line guy, as the Superman guy, and let him get the glory. That's great. You cannot use him as your actual quarterback. He's not very good at quarterback. He can't throw the ball anymore. You kind of have to throw the ball to be a quarterback, and that's not something he can do with any kind of accuracy, clearly, judging by this game against the Dolphins. So, it's sad to see, but that's another situation. Just like Ben, like when it's over, it's over. He's not nearly as old as
down,
Ben.
It goes down hard. Yeah, you talk about another team missing a mediocre quarterback. We already talked about the Saints missing Jameis. Maybe Carolina's missing Sam Darnold? Right?
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
Didn't quite
far. What did we miss here? We talked about we didn't talk about New York Philly. That game was brutal. And the Eagles finally let me down.
I still think the Eagles are easy to read. Just make Jalen Hurts throw the ball. It doesn't go well when you make Jalen Hurts throw the ball, though Jalen Reagor could have been the hero if you saw the end of that game. He had a couple of balls that he could have caught for the game-winning touchdown. They went off his face.
Put it right on him, wrong place.
It hit him in his hands on fourth down, again in the wrong place.
Right, which still doesn't actually get me a win because that was a 3-4 point spread.
Right. But the Eagles could have won the game straight up in that. Yeah. But now it's Jalen Hurts throwing the football is kind of ugly, and I still think that the Eagles are a team that you can figure out pretty easily. If a team is decent against the run against them, then you can go ahead and pick against them, because then they're relying on throwing the ball. And right now, Jalen Hurts doesn't look like he can throw the football. He's not very good at that.
And the other team in the NFC East that got the win was Washington. And I didn't learn anything about Washington, but just solidifies Seattle is trash.
Yes, they are. Five straight three and outs on Monday night for the Seahawks at one point, giving the Washington defense credit for, you know, they play solid at every level, but man, you know what? Russ is coming back from the finger injury. He's coming back from a month of not playing NFL football after the season has started. You're almost putting someone back at preseason level when you do that, and you know, to expect him to just come right back and jump into everything, probably was expecting a little too much. So I hope I'm not making excuses for Russell Wilson. I honestly think he's better than this. I know he's not playing well at all since he came back, but I really think he's better than what this is.
Yeah, statistically, nothing he did was that terrible. What really stands out for Seattle being terrible is their running game.
Yeah, they got a whole bunch of running backs, and none of them are doing anything at the moment.
Yeah, outside of Russell Wilson, they ran for 18 yards.
Well, you know it's bad when they look at that crap that Adrian Peterson was putting on tape for the Titans, and
yeah.
They just say, you know what? We want some of that. Yeah. So the Seahawks are
he might be their best running back. Just
I didn't
think that's how bad they are.
I didn't think anybody was giving Adrian Peterson another chance after what he did for Tennessee, but that's how desperate the Seahawks are. So we'll see if that does anything for them. And Justin Herbert couldn't be the superstar again. He tried to be the man, but wasn't able to get it done. And the Denver defense, as one of those efforts, which they're capable of every now and then, and they strangle off the Clipper Chargers. So,
right. Again, when you have a team like the Chargers who are getting better, right, but they're over-reliant on the quarterback, you're going to have games like this. You're going to go into a tough place to play on the road, and the team that still plays some defense, and if you're not the man, if you're turning the ball over and you're not putting the team on your back, you're going to get games like this.
And you're also got to have a whole lot of luck in a lot of these situations. And I don't know if you had seen it, but the Patrick Surtain II, pick six, what a gift, goes right off of Austin Eckler's body and deflects about 65 yards in the air right into Surtain's hands for a pick six. That goes against Justin Herbert on his record as an interception for a pick six. That's bullshit. I'm sorry.
Don't tell Patrick Mahomes' mom about that.
I'm with her
yeah.
Now, man.
Trust me. Hey, I played quarterback when we played, remember? I had a few of those. Those were on me. But what do you do when the ball hits somebody in the chest and then deflects into the – like, where was I supposed to put that? Where did you want it?
That's on you. That's an interception that you threw because you threw it off his hands. What?
So, Justin Herbert, you bum.
That's right. Terrible. How could you? I don't know if we're going to be alive for them to make that rule change they're going to put some of those turnovers on the running backs or on the receivers instead of on the quarterback, but I think it's going to happen one day. I don't know when, but I think it's going to happen. Unless you got anything else for week 12.
No, I think we need to let's make some picks and be done with it. The longest year ever.
So our records for the week, you already pointed that out, 11-4 for me, 9-6 for you. That puts the season records at 99-80 for me, 86-93 for you. So after being up a bunch and then coming back tied, now I'm back up 13. Go figure. But you keep winning locks and I keep not winning them. So as you pointed out, you're within one of me now. I have 7 locks on the year and you have 6. So on to week 13 as we have 6 more weeks to try to figure all of this out. Longest season ever. We will get to the rest of week 13 after I tell you where you can listen to our show. You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Not on the radio, but only here on the website, blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. To be notified when we're live, you can follow the show on the Blog Talk Radio website, or you can follow my Twitter feed at IMLDDre. When I tweet out when we're live before every show. Jason is on Twitter too. His feed is at IMLDJTG. Our show is available as a podcast where you get the live show and a special VIP after show. To listen to the show as a podcast, about an hour or so after the live show is over, come back to the show page and look through our archives, or subscribe on iTunes or any number of different podcasting apps, including Player.fm, Mixcloud, Blueberry, and the TuneIn Radio app. You'll get the whole show, the live show and the after show, downloaded straight to you. You can always send us a question or comment or shout out via email to the following email address, inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can follow all of our picks on our blog. The website for the blog is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Our Thursday night picks will be available Thursday afternoon on our Twitter feeds. Again, that's at IMLDDre and at IMLDJTG. This copyrighted broadcast is a production of Jay and Me and is solely performed for our entertainment, as well as for any poor soul who happens to be listening. It is intended to be a football pick show for the private, non-commercial use of our audience. Any publication, reproduction, retransmission, or any other use of the descriptions and accounts of this podcast without the express written consent of Jay or me is strictly prohibited. 13 more games left to pick in Week 13. You think it's a long season for us? Imagine the teams that still have byes to come. There are four teams that are on bye this late in the season this week, and there's four teams that still have a bye coming up next week. That's unbelievable.
Wow. Mid-December almost, and crazy. We're still putting teams on byes.
I don't know what's going on with this.
Honestly, though, in a season like this one, I'd think you'd almost want your byes now. Like
later.
The Packers, like this is perfect.
Maybe perfect for a guy that's got a busted
the Browns,
up toe.
We got the Browns on bye this week. You know, if Baker, if he has any hand chance of, you know, gets 2 weeks now to just rest that shoulder.
I think Baker is a perfect example of why you want your bye earlier. Baker could have used a bye like a month ago or 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, well,
cause
what he needed to
like,
do was be not playing.
He looks like he's handicapped out there. So I think guys like that will want their bye a little earlier, but.
I give him credit. I mean, no one's saying he's not tough.
He's gutting it out there, but man, it just looks painful to watch him try to play. So we will not have to worry about him this week as he is on bye along with the Panthers, Packers, and Titans. So here are the rest of our picks for Week 13 after we got off to that great start on Thursday night. Picking the Cowboys over those moribund Saints. We will start with the Falcons hosting the world champion Buccaneers, Tampa at 8-3, Atlanta at 5-6. Antonio Brown got the old headhunter suspension, the old baseball headhunter suspension where the starting pitcher decides to just, I'm going to bean this guy in the head because I got an issue with the way he pimped out his home run trot. And knowing that he's, you know, going to be suspended for 6 games after getting that, but he wasn't going to pitch the next 4 anyway, so it doesn't really matter. All he did was give him an extra, you know, 2 days between starts. Most pitchers probably welcome that. Antonio Brown got the 3-game suspension for falsifying his vaccination card, and it doesn't matter because he's hurt anyway. His ankle doesn't want to heal up, so he wasn't going to play anytime soon anyway. So he gets that suspension that doesn't really affect him at all. So good job out of the NFL with their usual toothless suspension and punishment procedures. Tampa 3-3 at home. Atlanta still has not won in the whatever they're calling the Georgia Dome these days. Buccaneers are
Benz something.
Yes, Mercedes-Benz is going to sponsor.
Now. Yeah,
gonna sponsor every dome in the world.
Yeah, the Georgia Dome blew up.
Ah, that's right.
It's gone.
This is
the last game they played there. Fortunately, I wasn't in it when they blew it up.
That's very fortunate for all of us. In any event, the Buccaneers are big favorites, minus 11 at the Falcons.
Yeah, that's a big number, right? But you're going on the road, team that hasn't played very well at home. So I'm like, well, you know, there's things that are pointing towards Atlanta in this game. No, there aren't. Oh, my God. I don't know how Atlanta has 5 wins. I think Arthur Smith should be like Dark Horse Coach of the Year candidate. That team is 5-6 with a just – they're 27th on defense and 22nd. I'm sorry, 22 on defense, 27 on offense. That's not very good. They're almost dead last in the league in scoring. So their defense gives up a lot of points, right? And who are they playing? The top scoring team in the league. This doesn't add up well I'm going to take Tampa, who routed them the first time they played in a game that the Falcons were actually competitive in. And then I believe Matt Ryan threw back-to-back pick sixes in the third quarter. You can't be sloppy on both sides of the football. You can't stop people, and you can't score. And I don't think Atlanta can cover. I think Tampa kind of rolls this one up pretty easy.
Pick sixes to the same man, Mike Edwards, who also got suspended along with Antonio Brown for falsifying the vaccination card. So he can't do any pick sixes this
week.
Can't
do it again.
Yeah, he will not be eligible to do that. That came during that 48-25 Tampa Bay victory down in Tampa in week two. That Brady guy threw five touchdowns in that game as well. That guy that you hear at the top of the show during the introduction, that guy, he's pretty good. He very well might. I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson being back, that's something. That means that they can stay within three touchdowns this time instead of the four that they lost in week two. So maybe that's something, but I still won't cover 11. So I'm concurring with you in taking the Buccaneers.
Yeah. Tempting one, but no. It's too much.
Yeah.
Just too much. Tampa's too loaded.
Cardinals and Bears, we don't know what the Cardinals are loaded with. We still don't know if Kyler Murray and New Coppins are going to play. Even coming off the bye, they're still considered game-time decisions. So there's just no telling there, especially after we got burned a couple weeks ago and we thought Kyler Murray was going to play, and it wound up being Colt McCoy anyway. Just keep an eye on that is all I can tell you. Is there's a chance that they're not going to take the field even after coming off the bye. We know the Bears are still beat up as hell. Their defense is definitely beat up. Andy Dalton is still the QB1 because Kyler Murray is on the other side because Justin Fields is still injured and will not be able to play for the Bears, and still no Allen Robinson with his hamstring injury. So with all of that, Cards are 9-2, 6-0 on the road, and the Bears 4-7, 2-3 at home. Arizona's a big favorite here as well. They give 7.5 at the Bears.
Yeah, I'd probably be tempted if I was the coach. If I'm the coach of the Cardinals, if I'm Cliff Kingsbury, I'm sitting Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins in this game, because what do you have? You have the dome team, the warm weather team. They're going to the Midwest. They're going to be playing in cold, wind, and probably rain in that game tomorrow, if that's what's forecast. I'm not putting my top weapons on the field in that situation. That's just me. I understand that they're playing the long game here, and they're probably thinking, like, you know, the playoffs and all this, but I'm not putting those guys out there against a team. The only thing the Bears do is play a little bit of defense. So I wouldn't be putting injured guys out there too soon. I would give them that week of rest, let Colt McCoy go out there. He's proven that he can do it. Hey, he could even cover numbers. But you know what? I'm going the opposite way here. I'm taking the Bears. I'm taking the points. I think it's going to be sloppy. I think it's going to be ugly. I don't like dome teams and warm weather teams going and playing in the slop. I think it's going to be kind of ugly. So I'm going to take the Bears and the points.
You know, I always want to take a high-pressure defense like the Cardinals versus an awful Chicago Bears pass protection, especially if Justin Fields is playing. We know how he deals with high-pressure teams. He sort of turtles and kind of takes a dump on himself. But Murray won't or Fields won't be there. It'll be Andy Dalton instead. Kyler and Nuke are the big question marks. Are they going to be able to be out there for Arizona? And it's still up in the air. So, yeah, we're both kind of picking this on conjecture, trying to figure out who's actually going to play and who's not. I think they're what do I know? I think they're going to play because it's a bye week. They have time to rest up and get healthy. They've been practicing this week, but I thought they were going to play before because they were practicing.
Right.
They just wound up not playing anyway. So, like I said, what the hell do I know? All right, so with no confidence at all either way because I don't know who's playing, I'm going to take the Cardinals. I'm going to take them still putting a lot of pressure defensively on the Bears, even though it's Andy Dalton and not Justin Fields. And I'm going to take them to win a slow, ugly defensive battle in the elements over Chicago, who's just beat up and shorthanded and just not equipped to compete with Arizona. But again, no confidence at all because I don't know who's actually playing in that one. Moving on to, it's going to be a lot of chillier weather. I don't think it's going to be a lot of, like, rainy conditions, but it's going to be a lot of wind and cold out here in some of these games. Philadelphia at the New York Jets is going to be cold and windy, I believe. So the very latest news that just came out before we went on the air was that one of the Philadelphia reporters says that Jalen Hurts is not going to play. We know his ankle hurts. But one of the reporters says that it's going to be Minshew Mania under center for the Eagles. And I don't know if that was affected in the lines on covers.com.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts is out right now.
Okay.
So I'm looking at this right now, the up-to-date injury report. Jalen Hurts out on the injury report. I don't know what line you have for this game.
I'm looking at Philly minus 5. Has that changed?
Yeah, because it opened at 7, and that has now snuck down to 5.
Okay. But it hasn't changed since the news came out. It's actually a representative line of right now.
Right. That line, well, right. So the line, I think, with the news must have moved to 5.
I see. So, yeah, that's what we're going to go with. Philadelphia at 5-7, the Jets at 3-8, once again going with Zach Wilson, and Jordan Howard out at running back with a knee injury. So it looks like Minshew Mania, Gardner Minshew at quarterback, Miles Sanders, and maybe Boston Scott because he's beat up too at running back for the Eagles. So, yeah, Philly minus 5 at the Jets.
Yeah, and the problem with this is that the Jets, not a problem for the Eagles, being that the Jets can't stop the run, but a problem for the Eagles being that they lose that extra dimension, right? They lose the mobile quarterback, which also helps with the running game for their standard, for their running backs, because you don't know where it's coming from. And, Minshew's not immobile, but he's not Jalen Hurts. And, right. I think that's going to be a little much for the Jets, for the Eagles to overcome. So I'm going to take the Jets to stay under the number here. I think this ends up being, again, just kind of close and ugly. And Hurts not being there, I think, throws the Eagles a bit off their rhythm.
I think I agree with the general concept. It felt like the Eagles' fortunes are starting to maybe roll backwards a little bit with that Giants game last week and now with Hurts getting hurt during that game. I actually think the Minshew move and getting Hurts in there might work out for the Eagles. I was prepared to maybe take the Jets in the points as well if Jalen Hurts was going to go out there on a bad ankle, because you're talking about a guy who's not good at throwing the ball and his best asset running the ball, that he was going to be trying to do that on a bum ankle. I had a bad feeling about that. But now you go to Gardner Minshew. As you pointed out, he kind of likes running around. He's not immobile. He kind of likes to take chances and break the pocket himself. He thinks he's a big-time gamer. He thinks he's a number one no matter what everyone else thinks. If they lose this one to a Jets squad that's awful versus the run, it might be all over for the Eagles having any kind of playoff dreams. But I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to hang on and cover the number because Gardner Minshew will hang in there, throw the ball better than Hurts just because he's a better thrower. Not that he's very good, but Hurts is not good at all. And I like the fact that I like a quarterback that's going to be running around out there on two solid ankles instead of one hurt one. I think that's always a good thing. So I actually like the Eagles better with Gardner Minshew tomorrow. One of those weird things. I know. It's crazy. I'm going to go with the Eagles and give the number there. Speaking of the Giants, they are in Miami. They are 4-7. The Dolphins are 5-7, but moving up with a bullet, as I was talking about, they're on a win streak. I believe they've won 4 in a row now. And, Tua's been doing some things. It's been Tua time for Miami, and they've actually had some success. That's probably, based on their schedule, based on their opponents. But, hey, you can only beat who's in front of you, and now here's the Giants. And they've got quarterback issues as well. Danny Dimes has a strained neck. And so the bane of all Bears fans' existence, Mike Glennon, gets to start for the Giants at quarterback. And he's also, like Danny Dimes, is going to be limited as far as weapons goes because Sterling Shepard and Kadarius Toney are out again. For Miami, Devontae Parker is scheduled to return at wide receiver from his hamstring injury. Dolphins are favorites at home. Giants are plus six at Miami.
Yeah, who would have thought we'd be at this point after how bad the Dolphins were that they'd be, you know, minus six against anybody?
Yeah.
But it's Mike Glennon. It's also Mike Glennon with no receivers. I mean, the Giants receiver core this year, have all of them played yet together this year? It doesn't seem like it. That is just, I don't know how you're supposed to get anywhere when you cannot get all of your offensive weapons upright at the same time. Oh, and now you don't have a quarterback, and your options are Mike Glennon or this Fromm kid. Was he from Georgia, right?
Yeah.
He was the Bills backup, and now he's bounced around. Yeah, no, I'll take the Dolphins too. The Dolphins are doing some bum slaying right now. So, hey, good for them. And now they get Mike Glennon. I mean, he's like the definition of bum.
I'm a Bears fan, so I concur completely with all of that.
Is he still cashing those checks?
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Him and his family are set. He didn't have to play another damn
that
day.
That contract, that was like Brock Osweiler territory.
Because the Chicago Bears had to give Mike Glennon big-time guaranteed money to come in as a free agent. Mike Glennon. I will never get over that, ever. Yeah, I concur, and I have nothing else to add because you said it all, pretty much. All right, NFC North action, Minnesota and Detroit injury news in this one. Both teams are missing their starting running backs. They both have shoulder injuries. Dalvin Cook is out for Minnesota, and DeAndre Swift is out for Detroit. Vikings 5-6, Detroit 0-10-1, still looking for that first win. Vikings are big favorites on the road, -7.5 at the Lions.
Yeah, and I believe, are we back to Jared Goff now?
Yeah, he took back over on Thanksgiving, so.
The merry-go-round continues. I guess they saw enough of the great Tim Boyle. Ugh.
That guy, that was one of the worst starts
special.
Of the year.
That was special.
That was Cam Newton level.
Yeah, that game that he had against Cleveland, was that Cleveland that he had that one? Oh, man,
it was awful.
They covered that number against Cleveland because Cleveland is, you know. but, yeah, both of these teams missing their running back affects one of them way more than the other, and that would be the Vikings minus Dalvin Cook. So I think it would be easy to crap all over the Lions, but you know what? They've tried. I give them credit. They usually, even if they're bad, they at least they give you the effort, right? They put in the effort against the Bears. they covered that number. They're a little more rested. They get Goff back. Maybe I don't know. Maybe he plays with a chip on his shoulder for a half or a quarter. Or who knows? I'm gonna take these points. I don't like it at all. I can see this one going either way.
I said I was going to name that the show. I think I could see it going either way, but I forgot to do that. That's sort of our season motto overall. The Vikings played the Lions played these Vikings, very tough as well in their first meeting back in week five. They had to come back, the Vikings did, to beat the Lions 19-17 up in Minnesota.
Well, that was the crazy game where the Lions thought they had the win.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kirk Cousins went right down the field and got the field goal.
Greg Joseph actually won the game. They don't always miss in Minnesota. Sometimes they actually hit the game-winning field goal. And Greg Joseph won it for them. Dalvin Cook was hurt in that game as well. So Alexander Mattison, the backup running back for the Vikings, had a big day in that one as well, ran for 113 yards. So. We already know he can do well against Detroit. They like you said, they play tough. The Lions do sometimes. Sometimes they get squished, but they played the Vikings tough. Mike Zimmer, as I was talking about earlier, sounds like he wants to trust Kirk Cousins more. I read something about, quote, let Kirk cook. Like, this is what they want to do now with the Dalvin Cook injury. That's not good. again, that offense is so delicate. They need to be balanced. And if they're not, and they're relying too much on Kirk Cousins, it doesn't go well. He gives you those Carson Wentz, Baker Mayfield decisions every now and then where you go, wow, why did you do that? I'm going to concur with you and take the points and take the Lions to keep it close. I'm not going to go out on a limb and give them their first win like we tried to do on Thanksgiving. That didn't work out for us. We were very close. They were right there and very easily could have won that game. We're going to take the points. They're going to take the Lions to fight. They fought with Minnesota once already, and we'll see if they're going to do it again. So we will concur on that one.
It's sad because I kind of find myself like kind of secretly hoping the Lions do get a win. I don't want to see them lose every game.
I'm with you. I don't want to see them lose every game either, even though I think their coach is a meathead and doesn't know what he's doing.
Yep. They're bad.
And I think their quarterback is not good. And they're not a good organization. They're not a good team, but I don't think they're 0-16-1 bad. I really don't. On to AFC South, quote unquote, action. Indianapolis at Houston. Ugh. Colts are now up to 6-6, so they're one of the teams that hasn't had their bye yet. And Houston is at 2-9. Houston's backfield is so beat up as far as running backs go. David Johnson is not working out. They got rid of Mark Ingram. He's with the back with the Saints now. Houston is in such bad shape. Their lead back tomorrow might be Rex Burkhead. Like, it's getting to the dregs with Houston. Maybe they should have been in the market for Adrian Peterson. I don't know. So that's what the Texans are looking at. Colts are, of course, big favorites over that unit. They are minus 10 on the road at Houston.
Yeah, this is okay. I'm going to tell you what right now. If Carson Wentz has more than 20 passing attempts, they should just fire Frank Reich. This is the number 31 run defense in the league. If Jonathan Taylor doesn't go for at least 200, fire Frank Reich on Monday morning, because he obviously doesn't understand what their pathway to success is. I think the one pathway to success for the Colts will be good enough in this game. This is one of those ones where, the matchup just isn't quite there. And the Colts defense is they're all right, but Houston's DFL on offense. This has got blowout written all over it, especially bouncing back after a tough loss, So the good teams, and the Colts are good. They're not great, but they're a good team. I think they bounced back from that tough loss after 2 weeks ago, blowing the Bills' doors off, and everybody like, ooh, keep an eye on these Colts. Want to take out your frustration? Yeah, go play the Texans. I'll take the Colts.
You don't think Houston's going to take advantage of the Colts not doing what they're supposed to do like Tampa Bay did?
No.
The Colts definitely did what they had to do in week 6 against this Texans outfit in Indianapolis to beat them 31-3. Wentz had 2 touchdowns in that game, and so did Jonathan Taylor. And your boy General Mills had 2 INTs. So this will not be General Mills. This, of course, is Tyrod Taylor back for the Texans. It shouldn't make a difference. I'm not going to pick Houston to be outgained by 200 yards and win the game like they did against Tennessee. Maybe the Colts actually run this time. Maybe they actually do what they're supposed
maybe
to do.
Do what they're, yeah.
Possibly. So I will concur with you and take Indy and give the 10. I will not go as strong as you and say that they should be that Frank Reich should be fired if they don't give if Carson Wentz throws more than 20.
If Carson Wentz throws for more than 20 attempts and Jonathan Taylor doesn't run for 200, fire Frank Reich on Monday morning.
There you heard it, folks. Jay is on record. Chargers and Bengals. L.A. is 6-5, Cincinnati 7-4, and L.A. has to come out to Cincy in an early matchup, which may not be in their favor. 3-2 on the road, Cincy 3-2 at home. Cincy definitely impressed me with the way they handled the Steelers and the Chargers. We know that's going to be the big matchup and the big hype talking point is Justin Herbert against Joe Burrow, those two out of the same draft class, and we'll see how they match up in this one. We got the cop-out line for this, Chargers plus 3 at the Bengals.
Yeah, which defense breaks? Is it the lousy Cincinnati pass defense or the DFL Clipper Chargers rush defense? I'm going to give the edge here to the Bengals at home. Again, in Cincinnati, we could have the cooler weather, riled up fans. Bengals look, somewhat very impressive so far. They're not bum slaying. Their wins have been quality. So it's not like the Bengals are just going out there beating the Jets and the Texans and the Jaguars every week. They're beating good teams. And the Chargers are an aight team. They're a one-man band. It's Justin Herbert, right, trying to put the team on his back. Cincinnati's pass defense isn't very good, so I could see that. I think this is going to be – I like the over on this game. But I'm going to take Cincinnati if I'm forced to pick, even though this is, smelling pushy, but I'll take Cincinnati and give the 3. I think Joe Mixon becomes that factor too, because that run D for the Chargers is so bad. You try to stop Joe Mixon and here comes Jamar Chase.
Everybody opening up for Cincinnati, the rest of the field opening up for the Bengals. Yeah.
Yeah.
I concur for that very reason. The Bengals have shown me that they know that they have a solid running back and a solid running game, and that they can go to that when they need to. And I think this is the game that you go to that when you're facing the worst run defense in football. And, it's sitting right there for the Bengals. The pathway to victory is to keep running and hammer that ball on the ground until – the Chargers do something to adjust to that, and then that opens up play action for Jamar Chase and all the other Bengals weapons. So, this seems like should go Cincinnati's way. I'm concurring with you on that one. A lot of concurring early in the early games. We're dipping on a couple of them, so it's not so bad. Moving on to the late games now. Jacksonville going out to Los Angeles, and those – L.A. Rams, and what is wrong with the Rams, and can they right the ship? Well, it's a great chance to right the ship playing the Jaguars. Darrell Henderson has a quad injury at running back for the Rams. He should, if he does play, he should split time with Sony Michel. And, of course, Odell Beckham, as I talked about before, has some sort of hip injury after he scored a long touchdown last week, so he's sort of up in the air for tomorrow. The best cornerback for the Jags, Shaquille Griffin, is still concussed. He's not going to play, so that should give the Rams and Matthew Stafford another great path for success if they can mount it. It's the biggest spread of the week, so the public thinks they're going to rebound back. The Jags are plus 13 at the Rams.
Yeah, Rams go on the road and lose and get to come home and play the Jaguars, right? I mean, it'd be 13-point favorites. So people still obviously believe in the Rams. They're going to give them almost two touchdown favorite here at home hosting the really bad Jaguars team. So, nothing's going to make you get better or turn your season around or make you feel really good about what you're doing than having Jacksonville come to town on the cross-country trip. I think sometimes we want to be the smartest guy in the room when it comes to the lock of the week, and we do try to avoid these big lines. No, this isn't going to be a competitive game. Rams coming back off of a tough loss. They get to feast all day long on Jacksonville, in the air, on the ground. It doesn't matter. Jacksonville has no shot. I'm going to take the Rams here, squish, and lock it up.
Come on, Stafford. Anytime you want to wake up, come on, buddy, let's go. I don't have the balls of Jason. I'm not gonna lock you up the way you've been playing because you haven't earned that from me. But it is a very nice soft landing spot. Can't get much cushier than the Jags, and I will concur and give the 13. Come on, Stafford, anytime you want. Hopefully, Jason locking you up will do it for you because he's been the man with the locks. So that should bode well for you. That's for sure. So I'm definitely rooting for that. All right, no one's locking this one. This is a tight one. Washington, Vegas. This is back and forth. Should be a very close matchup. Potato Skins are 5-6, and look who's the hot team in the NFC. We were making fun of nobody a couple weeks ago having a long winning streak or a winning streak longer than one game in the NFC, and look now, yeah. The longest winning streak in the NFC belongs to the Washington Potato Skins, who have won 3 in a row. And they're taking on the Vegas Raiders at 6-5, who themselves are starting to turn it around and play a little better after all of the things that they went through. They had the big victory over the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving. Washington only a 1-point dog at Vegas.
I'm not sure why this line is only one. So I'm taking the Raiders because it feels like a little bit of a gift line that the line has actually moved a couple of points in Washington's direction. The Raiders only The Raiders have one play, right? What's their one play? It's the Derek Carr YOLO ball, right? That's it. That's their one play. What does Washington do really bad? Oh, yeah, they can't defend the pass. They're brutal on the back end. Derek Carr lights them up. I'll take the Raiders here and give that point.
That whole point.
Yeah.
The Potato Skin safety Landon Collins is out with a foot injury. That's not going to help their back end. But the Raiders are missing a weapon. Their tight end Darren Waller will not play with a knee injury. But this one, if you're a fan of style clashes, this is a game you want to dial up. This is the two most opposite offensive game plans you could possibly come across, because the Potato Skins are trying to grind it out and extend every drive, and the Raiders are just trying to throw it up and get as many big yards through the air as they possibly can. The Pro Football Focus podcast had a great line. They called Washington Service Academy ball because it reminded them of the Army-Navy games where they're just trying to run the ball 16 times on every drive and make every drive 10 minutes long and just try to stretch it out as long as possible.
I believe when you and I would play Madden against each other, you called it the Novocaine offense.
Oh, geez.
Because I would just grind you out.
Convert every third down by 1 yard and just keep the drive alive.
18 play drive, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, definitely remember those days. If Washington can get after Derek Carr, those Novocaine drives would work. So that led me, this is such a tight one, I had to go a little deeper in the stats. I wanted to see which team is worse at sack percentage, who's giving up the most sacks, because both these teams we know can get after quarterbacks, so I figured the team that protects better is going to win. And that number is pretty close, too, but there is a demarcation. The Potato Skins are protecting at a 6.1% clip, so that's 6.1% of the time Taylor Heinicke is getting sacked, and Vegas is at 5.7. So a little better protection, very slightly better for Derek Carr. Combine that with the Washington Potato Skins losing some defensive weapons, most notably Chase Young, and I will concur with you and take the Vegas Raiders. After all of that, I came to the same conclusion as you, and it only took you 3 seconds.
It took me to realize that the Raiders have one play. Go deep.
And Washington probably won't
stop it. Can't stop that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Ravens-Steelers, first meeting for those two divisional rivals. They usually get after each other, but who knows? Who knows how much fight the Steelers have right now after what they've been going through, and who knows what to make of the Ravens when their quarterback is running out there throwing the ball away 4 times in the same game, even though they won the game. So Baltimore 8-3, Pittsburgh 5-5-1. Steelers thought they were going to lose T.J. Watt to the Goop, but he got cleared, so he's going to play. The cornerback, Joe Hayden, is still out with a foot injury, and their big man, the defensive lineman, Cam Hayward, is ill. So look out to see if he's going to play for the Steelers in that one. Baltimore is the favorite on the road. They are -4 at the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, you know, this feels just like one of those gut kind of picks. Like, you know, I'm not really looking at too much into the numbers. I'm not looking at the stats. It's the Ravens and the Steelers. It's like I said with the Falcons and the Saints, right? It feels like they're kind of always destined to play a close game. I looked at last year's results. Both games were tight. I believe there was a 4-point and a 5-point game in the two games they played last year. These teams don't like each other, right? Yep. They just don't. And Baltimore, that offensive effort, that quote-unquote effort that they had last week. Just something, you know, they go through these stretches where something's not right. Is this two broken offenses playing against each other? God, take the under on this one. I'll take the Steelers and the points, even though I'm done with them.
Done with the Steelers, but you're taking the points. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, big shot Lamar. That was what he was looking like early in the season, that the offense didn't look broken at all. It looked like it was fixed. It looked like the biggest problem they've been having all this time with Lamar Jackson was some downfield consistency, and it looked like he had found it. And not so much. Maybe he lost it again in that week that he missed with whatever illness he had. So it was only one game, so it doesn't necessarily mean they're broken again. But, yeah, it was very concerning for us to sit there and watch a nationally televised game and watch Lamar Jackson consistently throw the ball to the other team over and over and over again. He's putting the ball out there way too much for that. Now the question is, can the Steelers take advantage? And, you know, that's a broken team, period. Not just the offense. Yep. That whole team seems to be broken and having a crisis of confidence. And again, how the hell do you get your ass beat twice by the Bengals in the same year? That's just, I don't quite understand it.
They got whooped.
Yeah, it wasn't competitive. It was not competitive. I think it was 31-3 at the half or something like that. Like, they didn't even try. But Ben is awful too. So that's why I got to go with the Ravens. Not just for Lamar maybe coming back after the one bad game and riding the ship, but also because Ben looks so washed. Like, you got – when you look that washed that they're putting out articles about you that it's your last year with the team and you're, you know, contemplating this and contemplating that, like, in the middle of the season, this is leaking out. Like, you're that bad that they have to leak these stories in the middle of – you're still trying to play football. And you're still a 500 team, so it's not like you're just dead in the water. But that's how bad you look. These things are leaking and coming out. So I'm going to go with the Ravens to figure things out. You know, again, going back to coaching, if you got to trust one of these two coaches to figure things out, I'm going to trust John Harbaugh, even though it might be a that's so Ravens situation. I certainly hope not. On to the NFC West, San Francisco visiting Seattle, another situation where a team looks done. Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, that you talk about a broken offense. Oof, they really can't get it going. But the Niners had Debo really doing things for them on the ground, in the air. Definitely did it big in the air in their first meeting in week four. Had a big game for the 49ers. It wasn't enough because the Seahawks still won in Santa Clara 28-21. But this one, Debo will not be there. He has got a groin injury. And we talked about Adrian Peterson signing on for the Seahawks, which is perfect because that's just that's right on brand for the Seahawks and the way they're doing things is to bring in Adrian Peterson off the street to try to run for them. 49ers at 6-5 are -3.5 at the 3-8 Seahawks.
You want to talk about where we are at this point in the season with Seattle. What was the last time we saw a team that was DFL on offense and defense? They're not, but they're damn close. They're DFL on defense and 31st in offense. That is awful. I mean, that's not even a consolation. Like, hey, at least we're not the worst in both. No, I'm. You talk about. I tell you, I'm done with the Steelers. I'm really done with the Seahawks. I had them. I have punched their ticket for last place before the season started, and they have not disappointed. They are really awful. I give Russell Wilson credit for coming back from the injury, but nothing's working for them. They can't throw. They can't run. They play zero defense, and this is Kyle Shanahan now getting a little maybe revenge game against a team that beat him early in the season. Yeah, it's going to be bad. I'm going to take San Francisco here. And they've been a team that's trending up as far as I'm concerned. I think they've been trending. I think they're a bit on the upward swing here.
Yeah, they definitely are. But it's going to have to be yet another game plan switch for Kyle Shanahan because he switched up and started to use Debo Samuel as a running back and was, you know, scaring up some points and some new ways to score. And now he's going to have to go in another different direction without Debo as a weapon. I think that's a big, big deal because that's how important Debo had been playing the last couple of weeks. The Seahawks franchise being broken might allow them to switch up and find a new game plan. And I think I would still take San Fran straight up to find a way to win the game. But I'm just going to take the point that Hook scares me a little bit. Russell Wilson continuing to play like crap scares me a little bit because he's capable of throwing his YOLO balls and getting everything figured out just in one fell swoop. You never know. Yeah, hell, he did it in the first matchup. That was a game where they, again, had like 5-3 and outs to start the game, the Seahawks did. So they looked about as inept as they've been looking, and then they just magically sort of turned it around, and Wilson had three touchdowns in that game, including one rushing. So, they might snap their fingers again, and while San Fran is trying to readjust and figure out their offense once again. This is all, you know, Shanahan is just trying to do whatever he can to not rely on his quarterback. He clearly is doing all of this in service of not having to rely on Janine Garoppolo. So while he figures that out, there might be an avenue and a way for the Seahawks to slip in and stay competitive. So I'm going to take the points there and get a little cute.
Oh, you're getting cute. All right.
Yeah, this is getting a little cute. On Sunday Night Football, the Denver Broncos and the Kansas City Chiefs, AFC West. The Broncos at 6-5, Kansas City at 7-4. You never know what's going on with the Chiefs. Is yet another team that you talked about. There's no dominant teams in the NFL. They all got flaws. They all got issues with them. Where you kind of look at them with a raised eyebrow and go, I don't know. But the Chiefs are coming off the bye. We know how that is with Andy Reid. That great track record with them. Denver will not have their running back Melvin Gordon. He's got a hip injury, so the rookie Javonte Williams gets the nod, gets all the reps for the Broncos. Denver, big underdogs plus 10 at Kansas City.
Yeah, and the way the lines are looking on this game, the way the betting is going, a lot of action going towards the Broncos on this one. So, you know, people are believing in the Broncos. Maybe they're going conspiracy here on the theory that, you know, if the Broncos, the Chargers, and the Raiders all win their games this week, every team in the AFC West will have 7 wins.
Oh, jeez.
That's the kind of stuff I love, right? Like, you end up with a scenario like that where you could have 4 7-5 teams all in one division. That's just crazy.
Yeah, that would be chaos.
I would love to pick that, but I'm not going to. I'm gonna actually be in the minority on this one and give the points. The Chiefs feel like, you know, we talk about the Chiefs a lot, right? The Chiefs are bored. The Chiefs, you know, they're just kind of putzing their way through the season. They just expect to kind of be there. You know, what's wrong with Patrick Mahomes? And then you look up and go, oh, wait, that's the number two offense in football. And they're not even trying. Like, they haven't been any good offensively. They've had games where we look at them and go, they're absolutely broken. And you look up at this point of the season, now we're into December, and that broken off, quote-unquote, broken offense is number two in football. I feel like that the Chiefs are coming off that bye, getting ready to just kind of go on that run to get it round off into playoff form here and get back to being the Chiefs. So I'll give them all.
Yeah, what would you say? What were you saying about not trying to overthink locks and whatnot? Keep it simple, stupid. Andy Reid
off a bye.
The bye.
It's all you needed.
Keep it simple, stupid.
But shockingly, we are in the minority against the betting public on this. I mean,
I guess just because the Chiefs have had those moments where they make you go, ooh, what's wrong with the Kansas City Chiefs?
But Patrick Mahomes is throwing all these picks, number two offense in football, and they're bad. I think that just tells you what the expectations are for the Chiefs, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you see Steph Curry, you know, miss some threes in a row, and you go, what's wrong with Steph Curry? And you don't realize he's still leading the world in threes by a mile. It's kind of similar to what Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs. Yeah, number four passing in yards per game. Number four, broken. Uh-huh. So Monday night, this is going to be interesting. This is going to be fun. First of two meetings this year between the Bills and the Patriots, and here comes the evil empire, the vengeance of Belichick. Like a Marvel villain, will he lead his Patriots all the way past the Bills? They've racked up all these wins. They're technically in first place at the moment because they haven't had their bye yet, so they're a game ahead of Buffalo in the win column. They get their first of two with Buffalo. They're at Buffalo on Monday night. That absolutely should be an insane environment up there in Buffalo with Bills Mafia. And who's going to come out on top? New England is the slight underdog plus 2.5 at Buffalo.
This game, you would talk about, yeah, this is like what, when the schedule came out, I don't think anybody looked at what this would be like. This has like game of the year potential. You know, you've got the Bills mm-hmm. who are supposed to be like, they are going to be in control of this division for years because the Patriots had fallen apart and Bill Belichick gets that thing retooled in what, 2 years, not year and a half. Goes not so fast. It'll be very interesting to see what that New England offense can do because this is the number one defense in football, quote unquote, number one defense in football, which just something doesn't feel right. Because the Bills have been, they've so many bad teams, but then they've come up so small against good teams, it gets really hard to trust the Bills. And then you take the other side of that, which goes, yeah, but this is their chance, right? This is their spot. They're playing the Patriots. They can put some separation on them in the division. Like, if you are really going to be, like, that ascendant team, if you want to be a Super Bowl contender and you're doing this at home, you have to win this game. I'm still taking the Patriots. Patriots are going to win the game. I'm going with the GOAT coach against Josh Allen and the Bills, who I think we're expecting to kind of coast through this season, and I don't think they're going to be ready for this fight.
Yeah, that's that would seem to be a popular thought or popular opinion.
Actually, the Bills are the heavy. Bills are getting all the action. I mean,
I was surprised by that.
Yeah, Bills are getting most of the action from the bettors this week, based on what it says on covers.com here.
Yeah, no, I was surprised. I really was thinking that this line was going to be either a pick 'em. Or maybe even New England, a possible 1-point favorite or something, because they've just been steamrolling people, and the Bills
That would have been crazy disrespect against the Bills.
Right, but have the Bills not earned that disrespect by the way they played this year?
Against good teams, yes.
Right, yeah, killing bums and coming up small against the better teams, as you pointed out. Yeah, and not just that, but... you know, what I've been talking about, I know I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, the metaphor about being in a gym. And if you lay down on that bench and you keep lifting that bar without any weights on it and thinking I'm getting in shape now, I'm getting strong, I'm getting ready. And then here comes some big 45-pound weights on either side and slide them big plates on. It's not going to go well for you because you're not built up. The Bills are out of shape, out of practice, however you want to phrase it or call it. They have not been building themselves up against good teams. They have been building themselves up against bums. And then when good teams come along, they look like they're out of practice. They look like they're out of shape. And that has not changed. That my opinion of that has not changed as the season has gone on. Not only that, but what an absolute terrible, awful time building up your number one defense and then losing your shutdown cornerback, Tre'Davious White, who tore his ACL in their last game. And now you get to play the good teams in the second half of the season without your shutdown corner. That's just awful, awful timing on the Bills' part. I actually feel sorry for them. This is a shitty-ass break. There's no other way to put that. But now here come New England and Mac Jones and the 7.9 yards per throw offense that the Patriots are putting together with guys that I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it. The evil empire is doing it again. So everything just lines up for the Patriots, in the favor of the Patriots, in the favor of the evil empire, and against the Buffalo Bills, who thought they had everything going in their favor and thought they were just going to coast to the division title and just keep going and building on what they've been doing in the last few years, building their franchise. And, yeah, I'm going to concur with you and take the Patriots and take the evil empire and take the Hall of Fame coach. Just everything is against Buffalo right now, and everything is on the side of the Patriots. And I hope this doesn't lead to the Patriots actually coming through and shocking the world and winning the division, but I don't know. I don't want to call that, but I wouldn't necessarily be surprised. More on our after show. Into our VIP after show program. Yeah, that game Monday night is going to be a barn burner. That is must see TV to see what happens in that one, because it feels bigger than what it is. It's just one of two divisional matchups, but it almost feels like a referendum on the Bills and their progress. Like, if they don't represent and show themselves in this game, like, they're going to be in jeopardy of being called frauds by everybody the next day, Tuesday morning, if they don't show up Monday night.
Yeah, not even – it's okay if you lose, but don't get embarrassed if you're Buffalo,
yeah, show,
right?
Show up, yes.
Yeah, right. Don't do what you did against the Colts. Don't do what you did against the Titans. They had other ones too. Yeah, don't do what you did against Jacksonville. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's the worst.
Yeah. So don't be those guys. You got to show up. Now, if the Bills could, now we don't have it picked this way because we're going with what we've been seeing, right? We're going with that trend and just the way the Bills have played. If the Bills go out there and they just annihilate the Patriots, hey, you know what? Golf clap for them, right?
Yep, hat tip.
Yep, you woke up, you showed us, because that's what we just keep asking you to do, Buffalo. Every time you get these big games, show up. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to keep picking against Buffalo against good teams until they show they can beat one, right? This is easy.
Exactly. And keeping it simple. Until you show up, until you show us that you deserve to be trusted against real competition, we're going to keep picking against your ass. So, yeah
the
shut
Bills
us
have,
up.
The Bills have six games left, two against the Patriots and one against Tampa. And then the other three are Carolina, Atlanta, and the Jets. You know what and the way the Bills are playing, that smells like 3-3.
Exactly. How did they get a schedule where they played no middling teams? They're all either bums or really good. I don't understand.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, have the Bills just played an okay team yet? Like a league average team? No, it's like they're playing just absolute garbage, or they're playing an elite team. And I don't know if the Patriots are quite elite, but
they're really good. They're
playing
not
that way right now. They're playing really, really good. How's that?
They're 8-4. They're not middling.
No. And the last time the Bills played the Patriots last season, they beat them 38-9. Obviously, that was a different team, right? That was that wasn't even the Cam Newton Patriots. I don't even know who was even a quarterback. Was that what's his name? I can't even think of him.
I can't either.
The guy that Belichick liked, but he was really a bum.
Was it Stidham?
Jared Stidham, or was it some random Hoyer, or random Allen? I don't know who it was.
You got me curious. I'm reaching for my old sheets from last year to see if I have it written down who their starter was. But I don't even know what week that was. Oh, there it is. Monday night, Buffalo 38, New England 9. I do not have who the quarterback was. But whoever
I can tell you.
Threw for a grand.
I can tell you right. It was Jared. It was Jared Stidham and Cam Newton both played in that game. Stidham and Newton. Okay, these are combined stats. This is both of them together. This is, Stidton. Went 9-for-21 for 78 yards. That
Cam
was total.
Jarrett.
That was both of them together. Cam Jarrett Stidton.
Yeah, 78
actually, I'm sorry,
yards.
We'll call him Cam Jarrett Stuton.
There you go.
And he went combined, went 9-for-21 for 78 yards.
And Project goes for 344 in that game against that retooled New England defense that had a whole lot of guys missing. So I want to see that again. Not only show up, but Project, go for 300 against this defense. See what you got against these guys. Last year was a whole different animal. So I want to see that.
Yeah, and no reason for the Bills not to dominate this game. They're healthier. They have all the weapons. Other than Tre'Davious White, they're not really missing anybody critical on offense at all. So they've got all the weapons. You know, they should have Diggs. They'll have Beasley. They'll have their running backs, even though the running backs suck.
Yeah.
But they'll have everybody out there. There's no excuses for them, and we're still picking against them.
They haven't shown it.
Zero trust. Yeah, if they make us eat this one, hey, good for them. You showed us, but they have showed us nothing against any good opposition this year at all. And it's not even like those games that they lost to those good teams were close.
They've been desperate for running help. I believe last game they went to Matt Breida, the Niners cast off.
Adrian Peterson will be on the Bills by next week.
Oh, God.
He's just going to try to play for every team in the league.
No, I think he's with the team. I think this is perfect. I think this is a perfect landing spot. It's the old, tired, stale-ass Seahawks sign the old, tired, stale-ass Adrian Peterson. I think that's a perfect match for them.
Was Sean Alexander unavailable?
It reminds me of the fact that Jerry Rice's last landing spot was in Seattle. Nobody remembers.
Oh, I see. So this is where the great ones just go to die.
The graveyard of legends. Last place.
That's not exactly.
Joe Montana should have played his last game in Seattle.
Brett Favre.
Yeah.
Could have thrown a pick in his last pass for the Seahawks. That's my favorite stat, that the last pass that Brett Favre threw for every team he played for was a pick.
I just love that it was the Bears that ended his career, the last shot that he took.
And it was a pick.
And it was a pick.
And it was a pick.
So you got a guess on our differences? We only had a couple early.
Three?
Were we that much kumbaya? Looks like, well, it was definitely three. Yeah. Too
four?
Late. Yeah. Too late and too early. So
too late. Okay. Oh yeah. Cause you took Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Took the points, got cute.
But you agreed with me on some I didn't think you would, which I was like, oh man, I was hoping you would have taken Washington.
I labored on that one. I did. I had to go deeper into the numbers and try to figure out what angle I wanted to take. Yeah,
but these games that we disagree on, though, it's like the Eagles and the Jets. I still don't want to watch that. I still wouldn't watch that game. You took the Cardinals because neither of us have any clue.
Not a clue.
You know, that could be Colt McCoy and no DeAndre Hopkins. But that hasn't seemed like it stops them. But, no, I'm just playing that whole, playing that weather angle there.
Yeah, it's not going to be nice. That's
windy, wet, weird. You know, feels like one of those weird kind of games. I think Arizona is one of those teams that wants to play clean. I get that sense about them.
They don't like it messy.
Yeah, I don't think they want to play a mudder.
Yeah, they're not mudders. They're a very pretty team. They have a very pretty offense. They're not trying to grind things out. So, no, I understand that point. But I don't know. Maybe Baby Terminator's ready to grind one out for him. Who knows?
Baby Terminator.
So yeah, you've had your roughness going on at work and you were telling me you usually have some vacation time right after all that Black Friday stuff, but not this year.
No, not this year. I saved it all up for the holiday, for Christmas this year. So I got a whole bunch of time off around Christmas this year. So I'm excited about that. I get a lot of time home with the kids, family, but I'm gonna be pretty well beat by the time we get to Christmas.
And think about it, by that time, we'll still have about three more football weeks left to pick.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's going to be interesting how we're going to want to do our shows for Christmas weekend, because Christmas Eve is a Friday night. Probably don't want to do the show that night.
I remember we briefly discussed that a couple weeks ago. It's probably going to wind up being Thursday.
Thursday night, because there are Saturday games, too.
Mm-hmm.
So we could always, do the show on Thursday night. We always have the right to change our picks. I mean, one of us can text the other one or throw it up on Twitter or something if one of us wants to call an audible. But Yeah, I've got a feeling. That's the only week I think we're going to end up having to do a non-regular one. Obviously, though, New Year's week would be about the same. So we might have two Thursday shows in a row.
Yeah, I'm looking at the week 17 and 18. It looks like there's no Thursday game scheduled or Saturday for either one of those weeks.
Oh, okay. So for the we could do a show on New Year's night.
Right.
So we could do a show on January 1 because there's no Saturdays that week. Okay, so that actually works out. I mean, so we just end up doing that one Thursday.
And then week 16, the only, because you're not going to want to do a podcast Saturday night, Christmas night. And you're not going to want to do it on Christmas Eve.
Well, there's games on Christmas Day.
There is.
Yeah, there's games on Saturday. I know the Packers play on Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, I don't want to do a show on Christmas night.
Right. So, yeah, that's about the only other alternative I could think of is Thursday during that Thursday night game between the Niners and the Titans.
Ooh. Well, doing the show will be better than watching that game.
Might be doing some people a favor by having a show during that game. You don't have to watch the game. We'll keep an eye on it for you while we're doing our show, probably.
We'll try not to live stream it, you know, where we...
I mean, if something crazy happens, there's been a couple of times where we were doing a show during a game and just the craziest shit started happening. And we're like, oh, my God, you won't believe what just happened.
I remember it being live on air. I forget what show we were doing, but it was an April show when we were watching Kyle Schwarber get his knee blown out by Dexter Fowler.
Oh, yeah.
I remember us being live on air when that happened because we were talking about I don't remember what it was. It could have even been just like an off-season type show.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, it was early April, because it was like the first week of the season. And I remember us being live on air and you describe it to me happening. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, you don't want to see this. It's quite ugly.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
those were the days I was on the – I remember that because those were the days I was doing the show on my laptop and I was down in the basement.
Wow.
Doing those shows. And I would always – I'd have such bad Wi-Fi down there. My laptop would always drop and then I'd have to switch to the phone.
Yep.
So, no, now has actually been very knock on wood, very stable. You know, I've got a new computer. I've got new headphones. You know, I've got reasonably good internet. It likes to go out a lot, but it usually does it during the daytime.
Hmm.
Like every week when I'm on my days off, my internet's going to be down 2-3 times a day between like 10 and noon or 10 and 1. It just all of a sudden just goes out. Nothing works.
It's like crazy.
Clockwork. Yeah. It's that spectrum.
And then this internet, this Comcast, that flash that knocked us off the air last week, that's not uncommon, but same with you. Not usually during this time, not during Saturday nights. Usually it's during the day, in the afternoon sometimes. Like it almost feels like when there's a surge, like when the kids are coming home from school or something is when it starts to get a lot of internet action, and sometimes the internet goes in and out at that point. But Saturday night, usually I don't have those issues, but that was a rare one. And it wasn't long time.
At least it wasn't in the after show. At least we were able to recover from it pretty quick.
Right. And at least it wasn't out, like, oh my God, I can't get back on. It just flashed off and flashed back on. But that's all it takes is, one little internet, one little cutting of the connection to knock you off of Blog Talk Radio, of course. So.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. We're able to recover.
I'm ready to call it a night.
I don't have anything pressing to talk about. The hat tip and congratulations to my Memphis Grizzlies down here of the NBA who all-time beating of the Oklahoma City Thunder a couple of nights ago, I believe. I think it was Thursday night. Beat him by 73.
What?
Yes. Like 159 to 80-something.
Oh. That's like some NBA Live stuff right there.
Right? worst beating in the history of the NBA by the Memphis Grizzlies. And the kicker is that they're
– shocking.
I know. Oh, man, I was on Twitter when I saw it, and I was like, that can't be right. I wasn't even watching the games. I didn't really care about it. But when I saw that so I think David Aldridge was tweeting out there's an NBA team winning by 70 right now. And it's like, what? And it's the Grizzlies? The kicker of it all is that their best, most explosive player is the point guard, Ja Morant. He's hurt. He didn't play. They did this without Ja Morant on the floor. Like, what the hell? I don't know what got into them. I don't know what happened with the Oklahoma City Thunder, but I know that's a bad team, but to lose by 73, all-time ass whooping. So don't know why they happened to pull that out Thursday night, but congratulations to the Grizzlies for pulling out the whooping stick on the Thunder.
Yeah, I didn't even know that you could have a blowout that bad in the NBA. That's some college level stuff.
Well, like you said, video game. Reminds me of NBA Live 95.
That could happen in college though, and the team still didn't cover.
They are 75 point favorites. Unfortunately, they did not cover this right. Yes, when Incarnate Word visits the University of Kentucky and they beat them by 70 something, but didn't cover the number. Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I saw it either. Yeah, I really don't think I have anything else other than that of pressing importance.
Okay, all right. So I got a couple. I got some beer and a big cup of water in me that's trying to get out.
I'd say no more. Well, that's our big football party tonight. Hopefully everybody enjoyed it, and we got more. We got 7 more weeks of it, or 6 more weeks.
Bite your tongue.
And that's before the playoffs start.
It's never going to end.
The longest season ever, and it is living up to its name. But we will be back next weekend to recap this. I think it's an interesting week. 13 is not the heaviest as far as there's not a whole lot of great games on it, but there's a couple that are really, really intriguing. That Monday Nighter is really intriguing to me. I want to see if the Steelers are going to completely collapse and just, totally leave this earth and just not even try the rest of the year. And I want to see if the Vikings are going to rely on Kirk Cousins more and how that might look, because that might be some high comedy right there if that happens. I think there's going to be a week that has some interest to it, maybe not as much as others. But we will be back next week to recap that and to get you ready for week 14 in the longest season ever that just won't end. All right, we're done. He's Jay. I am Dre. This has been In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you all for listening, and come back next weekend for our football party, recapping week 13 and looking forward to week 14. And we will talk to you then.